All right, we're with the goo in red. And tweet your questions to at CH9Live, or actually it's hash CH9Live for Scott Guthrie, Corporate Vice President, right now working in the Azure world. How you doing, Scott?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. How did your keynote go?
I think pretty well.
Cool.
People seem to like it. So, it was pretty fun. I kind of did a quick demo of some of the stuff coming in .NET 4.5 on the server side with ASP.NET. And showed off a couple of the pretty cool web dev tools also coming to support that. And so there's a lot more that we weren't able to cover, but they kind of showed off some of the cool things coming.
Totally. And we're going to have a page inspector, or what was Project Eureka, interview on Channel 9 soon.
Yeah.
And that's actually incredibly interesting.
Yeah,
can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's I think it's, the official name is the page inspector.
Okay, fair enough.
We called it Project Eureka, but. It's a pretty cool way. Basically, it allows you to... One of the things we're adding in the next release of VS is a DOM Explorer as well as a JavaScript command console.
Nice.
And so basically, when you hit F5 and you're debugging, you can base it directly in VS, see the DOM Explorer view. You can also, in the command line console, you can run arbitrary JavaScript or jQuery commands. Mm. And so if you want to test something out or inspect something or debug something, you totally can. What we've done on the server side, which is also, I think, kind of cool, is... integrated it so that when you're running the app, not only can you click on something and see the tree, the DOM Explorer, like you can with other tools, but we actually map it back to the server-side source code as well. And so, if you're hovering over, a login link, or something I showed in the demo, it'll actually map you back to the login partial, bring up that source file, and you can basically just sort of highlight. Exactly where it's being changed, and you can make a change in your view and see it immediately reflected. And so it kind of enables a really, kind of rapid development kind of experience for MVC,
sure.
Which a lot of people have asked for. Is like, hey, do we, should we have a designer? And we don't really think a WYSIWYG designer makes sense for MVC, but having kind of this rapid back and forth between the viewer, the explorer, and source kind of really gives you a ton of productivity. It's a pretty nifty feature.
Oh, it really is. I mean, I'm very impressed by that demo. So we're asking questions here. This is Channel 9 Live. And here's your first question, Scott. What's the first feature from Windows 8 you want to get your hands dirty on? You. Well,
I've been working on Windows 8 for a while, so.
Let's pretend like you just came to it. Just learn about it.
I think the... I'd answer it in two ways. One on the client, one on the server. I think
yes.
On the... The server, I think one of the things that I'm kind of most excited about is, some of the WebSocket stuff I showed in the keynote. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty cool. I think a lot of the new REST service API work that we're going to be shipping as part of WCF and ASP.NET going forward is really cool. I think a lot of the new EF work is really cool. Mm-hmm. The workflow, all the great WebForms features and MVC features that are coming out. I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
Sure.
And the nice thing about .NET 4.5 also is it will run on older versions of Windows. So you can take advantage of it on Windows Server 8. Mm-hmm. But you can also, if you have older versions of Windows Server, like 2008, you'll be able to run it on there as well. So,
sure.
So I think there's tons of stuff that's really interesting there. On the client, I think some of the stuff that we showed yesterday that's pretty cool is... sort of the deep XAML integration that you can take advantage of for building Metro-style apps. And that's something that my team and I have been involved in. I think, in Steven Sanofsky's keynote yesterday, they did a great job kind of showing off some of the rich XAML integration and some of the tooling talks later that I think that we posted to the web, I think, today or tomorrow.
Yes.
Just seeing the rich integration and the fact that you can kind of build really high-performing apps, integrate with contracts in the operating system, deploy them to the App Store, take full advantage of just this rich, rich new client platform that we're delivering, I think it's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. I have to agree. So Al asked a question, and this is actually a great question. We probably should have started off with this, but did you cut the cord with DevDiv? I mean, now you're in Azure. You're in Azure world, which is in the cloud.
Yeah.
Can you tell? I mean, clearly what you've been saying, it's kind of obvious that that's not the case, but will you, what's the answer?
No, I know. I think a lot of people kind of misinterpreted when they said I was getting involved in Azure as to mean, I'm not involved in .NET or DevDiv anymore. And that's, about all the server pieces of my team moved with me. And so, it, you know, I still run ASP.NET and web tools and parts of Visual Studio. And you know, there's more that I run now on the server side than before. So things like WCF, things like workflow, I actually didn't previously manage directly. Okay. And now they're part of my team. But you know, the core focus of my team is basically the server application platform, and so I'm very, very involved with DevDiv. My team delivers lots of parts of Visual Studio, and I'm involved in Azure as well. But I'm still very, very involved in .NET.
Excellent.
In VS.
Excellent. So we have another question from Wade Beasley. The Azure SDK updates, will they be available for VS 2010 since Win 8 server is so far off, or Win 8?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, the Azure SDK updates that we shipped today, the Azure 1.5 SDK and the Visual Studio tools for that, the public download is VS 2010 only right now, actually. Because we don't yet support running Windows Server 8 inside Azure.
Okay.
That'll be coming in the future. You can basically download the Azure SDK tools. All the scenarios I showed today in my keynote, where you know I right-clicked on an ASP.NET project and automatically created the Azure deployment project, that's supported inside VS 2010.
Great.
Yeah.
And for people out there, I mean, Beasley, the person who just asked, we're going to have the Windows 8 Azure Toolkit at 1 p.m. with the cloud cover people, plus Nick Harris. So that's going to be, you can sort of dig into that there. So back to sort of ASP.NET world.
Sure.
And I kind of wanted to talk to you about async, async programming and ASP.NET. So I know that you also talked about how that can help you scale. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, ASP.NET's actually supported async since the very first release. And so the core kind of underpinnings of ASP.NET are actually all built on an asynchronous pipeline, a request response pipeline.
Sure.
Since the very beginning, we kind of designed it with async because, for a lot of operations, that's really the only efficient way to scale. And IIS itself has, from the very beginning, been built on async and, fully supports I/O completions and things like that, and has for 14 or 15 years. The challenge with async, though, has always been historically, how do you program it? And so even though we supported async with ASP.NET 1.0, you couldn't actually use web forms with async with the first release because we didn't have all the pipeline. And async was a pretty low-level thing you only did inside modules and handlers. We added async later to web forms, and we added async to MVC as part of the ASP.NET MVC 2 release a while ago. It's still kind of a low-level thing. Because the languages didn't directly support it. And when we talk about async on the server, we're not talking about calling two network requests simultaneously and blocking the server worker thread. We're talking about how do you call those two web services or REST APIs and then yield back the thread so that someone else can party on that thread in a very efficient way. And doing that without language improvements is really, really hard. And so the key thing that we've done with this release is actually a lot of the language work. And a little bit of framework work to support it, so that when you're writing an action inside MVC or you're writing an event handler inside web forms, you can basically yield back the thread effectively by just adding kind of an async keyword to your event handler or your action method, and then just adding awaits in certain places. And it makes it really, really elegant. You still get IntelliSense debugging support, all that stuff, but it allows you kind of very easily and kind of without introducing a bunch of functional bugs into your app. Take advantage of async, and you can really scale well. We've done a lot of performance comparisons on ASP.NET and .NET versus other frameworks and web frameworks that support async, we've yet to find anyone beat us. That's some of the benefits you get out of it.
That's cool. I mean, that's kind of what I was talking about was the async await pattern. For ASP.NET and MVC.
And the cool thing is it works across all of .NET. And so, we support it in, MVC and web forms with ASP.NET. We support it in WCF.
Excellent.
All the new HTTP client APIs support it. And then on the client side with WPF with Silverlight mm-hmm. and with the new XAML improvements we're making for metro style apps.
Yeah.
You know, that same async pattern is used everywhere. And
Excellent.
So in fact, if you look at some of the breakout talks that we'll be posting later this week, mm-hmm. I was looking at one that Alesh did from the Windows team yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, he was showing off some of the new WinRT APIs, mm-hmm. you know, how they naturally integrate with that async capability. And they're actually mostly natively async. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a thing of beauty to see it client server middle tier,
yeah.
that async pattern exactly the same with that rich language support.
That's awesome. That is awesome. All right, so thanks for asking questions. So Scott, what do you think the biggest implications are for the announcements made about Azure today?
I mean, there's a couple of announcements we made with Azure today as part of Satya's keynote. You know, I think you know, some of the biggest announcements were around probably the Service Bus version 2 shipping this week.
Okay.
And so if people don't know Service Bus, I'm going to be blogging a lot more about it after I kind of recover from the conference. But basically, it allows you to, it's kind of a really powerful messaging infrastructure and relay infrastructure. And so mm-hmm. It allows you to do a bunch of things where you can, for example, in the messaging side, you can the very basic stuff would be, you know, create a message and post it to a queue and allow kind of a decoupled processing of things. So you could have a web role when someone places an order. I can basically create a message for the order, stick it in a queue, and then return back to the client and say, hey, your order's been processed. And I know that, you know, that message is going to stay in that queue. It's not going to be lost if the power is lost or the network goes down. And I can have a back-end worker role basically dequeue that message and actually process the order and do that kind of in the background. Mm-hmm. And the beauty is that worker role could be running in Azure. It could be running on-premise within your own organization. It could be running in a partner site across the world. Mm. And that kind of that queuing decoupling is really powerful from a programming perspective. What's great about Service Bus V2 is it also supports PubSub. So I could post a message and then to what we call a topic.
Okay.
And then you could have any number of listeners listening to it. And so I could have multiple partners, or I could have an accounting department and a shipping department both listen to it and do stuff. And it's, you know, I'm only scratching the surface on it, but it's a really powerful infrastructure. So that shipped this week. It's now in production. You can start building apps across it. We have a new SDK update as part of the 1.5 release.
Nice.
Some nice tooling improvements come as part of that. Some new API improvements are coming as part of that. The emulator that we use for Azure inside Visual Studio is much more accurate and has higher fidelity with what's running in the server environment. We announced some of the geo replication capabilities inside Azure today.
Nice.
So that your storage can be automatically distributed to other data centers.
Great.
Things like that. So there's a bunch of really nice improvements.
Good.
This week. And in general, I'd say you're going to see a whole bunch of stuff come out over the next 6 to 9 months
mm-hmm.
That's now kind of in action on Azure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited about what the future holds there.
Excellent. Well, we know that, you know, you're helping to lead that way, so that's going to be good stuff. This is probably a question better for Mike, who's coming on at 1:30 today. We're going to be talking about Windows Server 8 specifically, but I guess if you want to try to answer that, Scott, you're more than welcome. So has Windows Azure influenced the development of Windows Server 8?
Yeah. Oh, in many ways, I mean, I'd say both Windows Server 8's influenced Azure and probably Azure's influenced Windows Server 8. I mean, it's a lot of the core compute, storage, networking is actually built by the same team.
Yeah.
So it's not even like two teams necessarily influencing each other. They're part of the same broader organization.
Cool.
In terms of, you know, one of the things that Satya talked about in his keynote this morning is kind of how we're trying to get symmetry between public cloud, like Windows Azure, and what we call private cloud, which is kind of your own, you know, data centers or, you know, set of servers running on-premise within your own organizations.
Okay.
And, you know, we're trying to bring that symmetry around the programming model with .NET and with Visual Studio. We're also trying to bring symmetry around just virtualization, storage, things like that. And, you know, being able to kind of build apps that run in both places, whether you're an enterprise or a company, or whether you're an ISV or a startup, you know, in a lot of cases that makes a big difference. That's something that you'll see us influence. And so a lot of the optimization techniques as well as the programming model, you know, we're trying to make it's not always gonna be the same, but you wanna have symmetry and consistency across them.
Sure.
You know, you're seeing a lot of that today with Windows Server 8 that's coming out.
Mm.
You'll see even more in the future.
Excellent. I mean, in some sense, there are sort of enlightenments in the OS for being a cloud.
Yep.
All right, so DM Portela, does Dryad Link play a role in Azure?
It does. I have to confess, that's actually not my team, so okay. I don't actually know that much about Dryad.
Sure.
I know we are doing work there, but I'm going to defer that a little bit because I want to make sure I don't.
No worries.
I don't announce someone's great feature.
Exactly. So I mean, that is, you know, because Dryad Link is actually a really interesting, super scalable way of dealing with massively distributed computation using Link. Iron Arc, what is the relation between the new WebSocket support and the recently released SignalR library?
Yeah. So my team is doing a lot of work with WebSockets, you know, both inside IS8 and Windows Server on the server side, and .NET, both ASP.NET and WCF. And then it's pretty cool in that we have a WebSockets, both listener and client, built into the core of .NET. And so even from a command line console app or a WPF app or you know, any .NET app, you can basically call a WebSocket remotely. And participate and integrate with it.
Okay.
You know, that's some of the work that's happening there at the core framework and platform level. You know, at the same time, though, there's a lot of people that don't yet have WebSocket-capable clients. You know, there's still, you know, IE6 or IE7 or IE8 clients out there. Mm. Not all the phones support it. And, you know, WebSockets is a standard that's kind of evolved. And so early versions of WebSockets don't work with the latest versions of the standards, and so even browsers that have supported WebSockets might not necessarily support the latest versions of them.
Okay.
And so, you know, we're in kind of still a transition period of how to do that. And so one of the things that SignalR we're doing with SignalR, it's coming from my team as well, is basically it's a client-side library and some server-side pieces in ASP.NET that if you're on a WebSocket-capable client, we will use WebSockets. But it can also do long polling techniques, so it can degrade automatically if you're not yet WebSocket capable.
Okay.
And so we'll do kind of long polling techniques with HTTP.
Okay.
And it, you know, basically provides a kind of a nice abstraction that you can write to, and regardless of whether you're, you know, running IE10 or you're running IE6, you can basically still do that same type of chat stuff that I demoed in the keynote.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So in the keynote, I didn't show SignalR in the client. I just wrote to raw WebSockets.
Okay.
Just because I wanted to kind of be clear, hey, we support WebSockets. Mm. But I could have, you know, very easily, with a few lines of code, used SignalR, in which case it would actually have fallen back and used long polling if a browser that didn't support WebSockets had hit the site.
Excellent, excellent. Stimpy77 asks, will HTML5 developers be able to obfuscate their work or otherwise make it difficult for people to reuse app code without permission?
So I think there's different scenarios. One is, if you're running inside a browser, certainly you can run like JavaScript obfuscators across your code, which helps a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. The bundling and minification stuff that I demoed in the keynote today, one of the things that's nice, and Mads Christensen has a good talk here this week, we support kind of a pipeline model with that.
Okay.
And so the bundling stuff is basically you can drop JavaScript files or CSS files in a directory, we'll merge them together, we'll minify them, and let you publish a single URL for that. You can plug in additional processing pipelines, so if you wanted to write in CoffeeScript, you could convert it from CoffeeScript to JavaScript, then minify, then bundle, and then send it down.
Okay.
And then you could also, if you wanted to plug in an obfuscator, you could plug in an obfuscator into that pipeline and just drop the files in, and we'll automatically run that obfuscator.
Nice.
We don't have a built-in obfuscator, although minification gives you some degree of obfuscation. But if you could use any obfuscator out there for JavaScript if you wanted to and integrate that in.
Excellent. And I'm pretty sure you can't view source on a Windows 8 HTML5 client Metro-style app.
Correct, yeah.
All right, so what's new in .NET Framework 4.5, Scott?
Oh, lots of things. I'd say I think there's some talks here at the at the conference. I think Joshua Goodwin's doing a good talk.
He'll be on Channel 9 Live as well.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things scattered across the framework. We showed some of the improvements to ASP.NET this morning, but there's you know, scratching the surface there. Mm-hmm. You know, I've started a blog series on some of the improvements. So if you keep subscribed to my blog, but you'll notice everything I did in the keynote I haven't blogged about yet. And so, you know, that'll probably be a, I don't know, post series by the time I'm done, if I ever get that high. You know, there's lots of improvements to WCF, lots of improvements to workflow and the workflow rules engine, lots of improvements to WPF, so data binding performance is a lot better. Some new control enhancements and improvements there. So definitely improvements to WPF. Improvements to entity framework and data. Lots of improvements nicely through the BCL, the base class libraries, you know, performance improvements, debugging improvements, you know, throughout the stack, really. It's a pretty nice release. I mean, it is a point release. So, you know, in general, you know, the biggest investments we've done with 4.5 has been around supporting Windows 8.
Yes.
From an architectural perspective.
Okay.
And probably the async capabilities from a language perspective. And then just pretty much everywhere throughout every part of the framework, there's just lots of really nice improvements there as well.
Okay. So, Eli, Luke, how does you, so you just talked about minification and combining CSS and JS. How does that work? That's his question.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, you can set up rules.
Okay.
And so you can actually, you know, you could say, oh, this folder or this type of resources are included or not included.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a rules engine that you can wire up. By default, you know, we have some, actually, for the MBC 4 release, we don't have any default minification rules set up.
Mm-hmm.
I had one set up for my demo this morning just to save time. But the final MBC 4 release will have like the content folder and things like that will be automatically wired up. So you'll see that probably in the next preview. But you can basically write like one line of code to say, oh, this folder bundle this type of resources. And then it's basically a pipeline model. So you could say, merge those things. Here are the rules around merging. Here's what to exclude or not include.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, today I did reset.css. And I did tankster.css.
Okay.
And there's a rule that basically that we have built in that says, oh, if there's a reset.css file, run that first in the minification. Because basically what people do with reset.css is basically just set everything to a consistent CSS pattern so that across all browsers you don't have inconsistencies, and then you want to apply it. And so you can do smarts like saying, run that first and then run my overrides.
Okay.
And you know the rules engine's powerful enough to do that. And then basically just send a URL to that directory, and you can optionally say /css or /js.
Mm-hmm.
So just say give me the CSS or give me the JS versions out of that file. As I mentioned earlier, Mads Christensen has a good talk this conference.
Okay.
And so he's going to go specifically, I think it's like on ASP.NET optimization and minification. Look for ASP.NET optimization.
Sure. Something
and,
like
that. Okay. And so he's got a whole talk that'll talk more about that.
Excellent. And of course, that'll show up on Channel 9 in the Build 2011 event section, so you can watch it and get all the information you could possibly want.
Cool.
Object Mapper asks, please explain what WinRT is in relation to WCF. That's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
They don't really, I mean.
Well, you're hearing a lot more about the WinRT at this event. WinRT is basically an acronym for Windows Runtime.
Yes.
Basically, it's a new set of libraries specifically for building, specifically optimized for building Metro-style apps.
Yes.
On Windows 8. It's primarily focused on client-side scenarios.
Yes.
And so all of our new APIs that we're shipping as part of Windows 8,
mm-hmm.
That are built as part of the operating system, that are Windows 8 specific, are built through that. And one of the nice things about the Windows runtime is it basically has kind of a common metadata file format for how you express APIs, and it's pretty rich and supports constructors and events and parameters and inheritance and a whole bunch of things, and it has kind of a common type system for base libraries. And so any language or runtime can basically consume any of the APIs built in WinRT.
Okay.
And so, for example, native C++ can consume them, .NET obviously can consume them,
mm-hmm.
and JavaScript can consume them.
Okay.
And so for a .NET developer building, let's say, a Metro-style app using XAML,
mm-hmm.
they write in C Sharp and VB.
Yep.
The Windows specific APIs, this part of WinRT, mm-hmm. So how I do, you know, buttons, controls, list boxes, networking, media stack, things like that, are exposed using WinRT, and so they can program against them directly. They feel just like they do today when they're programming WPF or Silverlight.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're built in this common metadata format, C++ developers consume them as well.
Yep.
And JavaScript developers consume them as well in addition.
Excellent.
And so that works nicely. One of the things you can do, though, is you can also use your .NET APIs or a subset of the .NET APIs inside your Metro-style apps as well. So someone was asking the question of WCF.
Yes.
You can use WCF inside a Metro-style app. Not all of WCF, so it's a little bit like you know, what we've done on, you know, the phone and other form factors. It's the subset that makes sense in the context of building a Windows 8 Metro style app.
Yes.
So you're not going to set up a WCF server inside your client, and so those portions of the APIs we don't expose. Mm. But if you want to call back to a WCF endpoint, you can do that using the same WCF API you have.
Excellent.
And we've done a lot of work inside .NET 4.5 so that if you, for example, return a collection of objects from WinRT, we map it to an IEnumerable of type T in .NET. And if you return back a string in .NET, it's an int, and it's an int in .NET. And so from a developer perspective, it's going to feel very natural, very integrated.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefit is it's the same API for everyone. And so there's kind of a consistency there across all the languages. That's pretty nice.
Absolutely. And the days of no PIAs and P invokes are
bye-bye
in this context. Yeah. Rock and roll.
And if you actually look at, if you download and play with the tools and build, for example, a Metro-style app using C#, you know, you'll see even, you know, you can derive from the button control, and you can derive from it in C#, mm-hmm. even though the button control internally is implemented in C++.
Nice.
And it just looks like standard inheritance. You can override. You can add your own properties and methods and events,
mm-hmm.
And so it's a pretty elegant model.
It's beautiful. All right. So, what are the biggest things you're working on in your new role in Azure? So, what's like top of mind right now for you in the Azure world?
I mean, there's a lot of things kind of I focus on right now. You know, a lot of the stuff that I kind of spend a lot of my time on is focusing on kind of getting kind of the app platform pieces, evolving them and investing pretty heavily in that piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a lot of what I'm spending my time on is, you know, how do we get the developer story really nice? You know, starting with, you know, downloading the SDK, installing it, you know, how do I write code and deploy it to Azure?
Mm-hmm.
How do I make the deployment process easier and even faster? You know, what is the sign-up process like? What's the portal? What's the management experience? What's the scale out?
Mm.
And you know, a lot of what we're trying to do is you know, historically Azure has been built by a couple different teams. You know, how do we bring a kind of consistency and end-to-end kind of polish across it?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of really, really powerful capabilities inside Azure today. You know, how do we round that out with new capabilities and have that kind of consistent end-to-end developer experience? And so that's a lot of what I'm spending my personal time doing.
Yeah.
And then kind of bringing up, you know, more capabilities and adding them to the platform.
Excellent.
So, you know, you saw, you know, just sort of, I've seen a couple of improvements just in the last couple of tools releases,
mm-hmm.
Like the ability to take an ASP.NET or WCF project, right-click, and add the Azure deployment.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see in the next, you know, SDK update even more improvements around publishing. You know, you'll see a bunch of new capabilities and services come online. And you know, a lot more exciting stuff that we'll be talking about in future events.
Excellent. Thank you for your transparency.
Yeah.
Ask questions, my friends, at #CH9Live. We have Scott Guthrie here. You can ask him Azure questions. You can ask him ASP.NET questions, MVC. So start asking questions. Eli Lucas asks, are JQ templates and data linking getting close to 1.0 release?
Yes.
jQuery templates.
Yeah, so my team's been involved with the jQuery UI team on templating and data linking, and basically we've been collaborating, you know, kind of in an open source way.
Cool.
Not in an open source way, using open source.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're contributing, others are contributing. In terms of kind of when it's locked in as 1.0, You know, partly because it's an open source project, we don't completely control that. Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I think the jQuery team's done a pretty good job of is, you know, kind of iterating, and they don't lock anything until they think it's 100% done. And so, you know, as we've kind of evolved, you know, as jQuery's been evolving, mm-hmm. you know, we're kind of, you know, taking lots of feedback, incorporating feedback, and you know, trying to get it, make sure it's right. And so it's, you know, I think the templating and some of those things you will see kind of get locked fairly shortly.
Okay.
But it's one of those things where, you know, until it's done, we don't want to say it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, likewise, jQuery Mobile's been evolving. We're involved in that now.
Okay.
You know, we do expect before we ship MVC4 and .NET 4.5 that jQuery done.
Excellent.
And that's why we're betting on that as well.
Cool. The on this topic, though, I mean, JavaScript, one of the great things about this whole JavaScript thing is the sheer number of highly functional libraries you have out mm-hmm. there that people are using from UI, like jQuery mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And
yep.
How do you like decide what you want to partner with in the open source context? Like, you know, there could be library X that lots of people are using.
Yeah.
How do you decide this stuff? My question.
Well, I mean, it's you know, I think it's a good question. I mean, it we don't really necessarily have like here's the exact blueprint.
Yeah, I understand.
Understood. You know, one of the things I typically like to push my team on is, you know, look at what are, you know, what's going on out there in the community. Like, mm-hmm. how do we not try to duplicate good stuff that already exists? And so, you know, that's one of the big reasons we bet on jQuery.
Cool.
Bet on jQuery UI. Now we're betting on jQuery Mobile. Is they're good projects, and you know, we can build, you know, things that do the similar things, but why not get involved and actually contribute? Mm-hmm. And you know, we're trying to do that with things like jQuery templating and data linking, which are things that we kind of started in projects and contribute there. So that, you know, that's one thing I look at is what's popular, what's cool, what looks good,
mm-hmm.
And you know, how can we embrace that and take advantage of it? You know, I think the other thing that we try to look at is you know, what are, you know, I think that's one thing about JavaScript libraries in particular, which is kind of nice. And jQuery, I think, has really embraced this in a nice way. Is
yeah.
How do you make it really functional? And it's not a giant big thing,
mm-hmm.
but it's actually very tailored towards what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think both jQuery and jQuery Mobile, and you know, even the jQuery templating thing, we're kind of splitting templating into two:
mm-hmm.
One that's a low-level render and one that's templating. You know, partly because, you know, if you just want a low-level render, you know, how can I add a 3 or 4K library into my project and take advantage of it?
Sure.
And it, you know, have it be an hour to learn everything about it and connected with it.
Awesome.
And so that's something else that we kind of look at, which is, you know, how do we embrace things that, you know, you can learn pretty quickly,
mm-hmm.
and you can take advantage of just what you need it for. It's sort of, you know, a screwdriver as opposed to a complete, you know, workbench.
Cool.
And so we look a lot at how things compose together, and if they compose nicely and cleanly and in a very kind of building block kind of way, then mm-hmm. we generally like that.
Awesome. All right, so we have some more questions here. You can still keep tweeting them to I'm going to keep saying at CH9Live because that's what we used to do. So pound CH9Live, tweet questions. Scott, will the Metro CSS styles be available for ASP.NET Razor applications today? Well, clearly tomorrow, but...
Yeah, it's a good question. So I showed today in my keynote using jQuery Mobile. And jQuery Mobile comes with a couple CSS style sheets.
Okay.
And you can actually optionally tailor your app to look like a more native app on different platforms. And so they have like kind of iPhone skins. And I believe the Windows Phone team is actually producing some Metro skins for Windows Phone.
Mm.
So that if you use jQuery Mobile and ASP.NET using Razor like I showed today, and you hit it with a phone device, you know, buttons and things like that can optionally look like the rest of the native experience.
Excellent.
So I don't have details on that, but my understanding is that's something that the jQuery Mobile team is working with the Windows Phone team on.
Awesome.
It'll be available in the future.
Cool. So Dapugs asks, what are you most excited about in MVC4?
Kind of a bunch of things. I think you know, we're shipping the first preview today, in fact. Of MVC4. And MVC4 works on VS 2010
okay.
and on .NET 4. So you don't actually need to use the new version of VS and the new version of .NET in order to use MVC4. We're making it work on existing .NET 4 servers. And so, you know, you can start building and deploying on that
okay.
Immediately. you know, and there's a bunch more features that will be coming out in MBC4 that aren't in today's release. You know, I think some of the async stuff is going to be really cool.
Yeah.
And builds on the MBC4.5 kind of capabilities. I think some of the JavaScript improvements, some of which are will show up with today's build, but you'll see even more in the future in terms of how you build Ajax apps and mobile apps are a big thing. I think the mobile stuff that I showed today is a really big thing. And you know, just look at how many smartphones are out there. You know, how do we make it just trivially easy to kind of optimize your site to work better with those? That, I think, is going to be a big differentiator for us. The bundling and minification stuff, I think, is going to be big. That works not only with MBC4, but also works, obviously, with web forms with 4.5 as well. Bunch of other stuff that I don't think is in the first preview, and so I don't want to get in trouble with my team for pre-announcing.
Well, you can't get in trouble, man.
But I can get a little bit of trouble with my team. But some pretty cool stuff coming.
So C-Sharp Fritz, what impact does the alt.net community and developer user group feedback have on design decisions for new products like VS Next?
In general, I'd say one of the things that we've tried to do, and you've seen this with designs like MVC, with the new web API work that's coming out as part of the next version of .NET for doing kind of RESTful APIs.
Okay.
It's kind of a deeper support for patterns-based development. Things like dependency injection, things like mocking, things like unit testing. I think those are things that we did not do as good a job of in the beginning of .NET, really supporting in an integrated way across our APIs. And so, you know, that's something we're trying to do kind of in a much deeper way here. We also announced yesterday that we're bringing unit testing to the Express queues of the Windows Express queues that shipped. And so, making unit testing kind of more front and center across all our products is something that we're doing. And I think you also see in the Visual Studio 11, I don't think we demoed it today, but much richer support so that, for example, running unit tests is no longer tied to MS test. You can do N unit, you can do MB unit, you can plug in other unit test frameworks into our test runner infrastructure inside the IDE and take much richer advantage of that. So there's a bunch of stuff there. You know, how much of it is alt.net versus agile versus other communities in general? It's hard to trace back exactly which suggestion comes from where, but I think I think that in general, that's something we're trying to be much more responsive towards and build products that work much better.
Excellent. So please remember, tweet questions to #CH9Live. I see we have a few WinRT-specific questions. In some sense, I'd recommend that you watch the Windows runtime sessions that are all going to show up on Channel 9 to get these kind of answers. Scott's spending most of his time working on the cloud, ASP.NET, things like that. So you had mentioned in VS Express that you're going to do unit testing, and Hangi asks about code analysis in Express queues. Any thoughts on that?
It's a good question. I don't know the answer to it.
Fair, that's fine. You stumped the goo, man.
I don't think we've made all the, in general, I don't think we've made all of the, we typically make kind of the feature granularity decisions later in the process. So, today, this week, we're shipping the Express queues for Windows, for building Windows 8 apps. And so you can build Metro-style apps in any language, and that's part of the Windows 8 image that attendees are getting here, and you can download. We also are shipping, I believe, the Ultimate Edition of Visual Studio 11 this week as well. And so that has all the features. Sure. The exact what shows up in Pro versus Premium versus Express, usually we kind of make those final calls a little bit later on, and we'll announce that well before the final release, but we're not quite ready to announce that here.
Absolutely. So Iron Jester asks, this is a critically important question, definitely related to all these great announcements. Do you have a contract with Polo? I mean, are you an official endorser of Polo products?
I actually wear different shirts. Today is a Polo, official Polo shirt. I like to wear this one for keynotes. It's a long sleeve, which is sort of is a little hot, but hot temperature-wise. It's one of my lucky ones that I do for keynotes.
Yes.
But I have
And this tradition started at Mix, right? Mix 08 or Mix 07, or
it's come back,
you remember,
like 5 or 6 years.
I mean, 5 or 6 years,
everyone, you know, said to me like, oh, there must be, you know, like, oh, this really smart branding thing. And it was a pure accident. I as you can tell, don't have a tremendous amount of design sense, and I wore a red shirt for some talk and it went well, and
yeah,
the next year I said, hey, you know, that was lucky, I want to just wear the same outfit, and it cool, went even man. Better. And then somehow now if I don't actually wear a red shirt when I do a talk, I get booed.
And wow.
So, well, I mean, not booed, but I did a trip to Europe, and I did like 5 countries in 5 days.
Whoa.
And I don't actually have that many red polo shirts. And
yeah.
I think I got to the 5th country, and I, you know, I didn't have any chance to do laundry because I've been, you know, in a separate country every day. And so I wore like a blue shirt, and I think I horribly offended, you know, 1,000 people in the audience that were all wondering, where's your red shirt? And
that's crazy.
And one of the local folks in DPE,
yeah,
you know, went out and bought me a red shirt so that the second half of my talk I could wear the official red shirt. And so now I make sure to always have red shirts every time I do a talk.
It's awesome.
It's a fun tradition.
Great. So Tourism Geek asks, is there any breaking change on ASP.NET MVC4 on the top of your head? I don't see one.
Yeah, no. On top of my head, it's looking thinner. But I don't think there's any breaking changes in MVC4 that I'm aware of. You know, generally, one of the reasons why we do the previews is let us know.
Okay, sure.
But, you know, in general, all the APIs should be the same. And, you know, I'm sure there might be some bug we fix that changes the behavior. But in general, our goal is, you know, like we've done on previous versions of
sure,
MVC and ASP.NET, is to be backwards compatible. Mm-hmm. And so it should be. Let us know if you see anything that isn't.
Absolutely. Great. So this is a good question. In some sense, can you access Azure over Android and or iPhone? Right? The client should be somewhat.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, in general, one of the things that we've done with Azure is, and you know, both Satya and Steve Ballmer actually touched on this briefly in his closing keynote today, which is, you know, we're designing our stuff to be, you know, accessible from anything. So I showed an iPhone in my demo today. But all of our APIs in Azure are actually defined kind of using a REST format and or an open kind of format. Mm. You know, not, you can call them from any language, any runtime, any platform. Mm. And certainly the services that you build and even things like ACS authentication and OAuth are designed so that, you know, you can call it from an iPhone, an Android device, Java client, you know, you name it, you know, we'll let you call it. And so that interoperability is a core thing. And there's sure, actually, there are on CodePlex a couple projects specifically for iPhone and Android developers for Azure.
Uh-huh.
That basically provide some, I think, native Objective-C and Java libraries that let you call Azure services from within those SDKs as well.
Excellent. Now, in terms of Azure itself being a operating system in some sense, a general purpose operating system in the cloud,
yeah,
it supports any number of runtimes,
yeah,
right? And so what sort of work goes on in your world to sort of extend its capability to support any number of runtimes? So what would be a good example? Let's say I have a math library written in C and C++. Sure. I want to throw that up on Azure and use that from my service.
Yep.
Possible, right? Or
yeah, any... yeah. I mean, in terms of you know, in terms of Windows Azure, you know, people often ask me like, "Hey, how does Windows Azure compare to, say, standard web hosting?"
Okay.
You know, typically in a standard web hosting kind of environment, you know, you don't always have the ability to, certainly a shared hosting environment, you don't have the ability to kind of upload arbitrary math libraries or different languages and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the nice things about Windows Azure is it does give you that ability where if you want to write, you know, if you want to install something custom within the role,
uh-huh,
you can. And there's an integration point where as part of the actual, you know, deployment package of your app or your service, you can include it so that it's consistent every time you do an app deployment or update.
Mm-hmm.
You know that it's going to be updated. You don't have to worry, is this file already there or not there, and so on. So if you want to write a math library in C++ and call it, you can.
Excellent.
You know, if you want to write a math library in
Python, maybe?
Python, you can.
Rock and roll.
And, you know, if you want to install a Java VM, you can.
Nice.
And so, you know, obviously, you know, we're investing very heavily on the app platform side with .NET.
Of course.
But, you know, we're going to make sure that you can use whatever framework or library you want with Azure and have a good experience.
Great. So keep on asking questions. We've got about 5 more minutes with Scott, #CH9 Live. We've got a couple more here. Jinashans asks, is there any plan, speaking of what we were just talking about, if you have a stream, can you have Stream Insight as an Azure role? Which is actually, Stream Insight is amazing technology.
Stream, yeah, it is definitely amazing. I also don't know the exact status of what we've announced or not announced.
Sorry, man.
And so it's a good question, and we've thought of that too. But I'm going to defer to the data team in terms of where we are in the roadmap there.
All right. Al is back. What servers will the CSHTML debugging work on? Cassini, IIS Express, full IIS?
Yeah, so CSHTML is kind of our Razor and C# syntax.
Okay.
And so VBHTML is Razor and VB. And so you can use that within, obviously, MVC, as well as kind of web page-based apps or any ASP.NET app.
Mm.
I think, so you can use that on any web server, and you should be able to get debugging on any web server. So IIS Express, Cassini, full IIS will work. Mm. You might be referring to the demo I showed today, where I was showing off the kind of Eureka page inspector stuff in my keynote demo. I think that'll work with any web server as well.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think that'll work with any web server as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Cassini, for people who don't know, is the one that you can sort of integrate into your ASP.NET application for local testing on a...
Yeah, so Cassini is kind of what we historically called the built-in VS web server.
Got it.
Or the built-in ASP.NET web server. And so with VS 2005 to VS 2010, mm-hmm. By default, you do finding a project, you run, and that little toaster, you know, toast pops up that says ASP.NET web server running. That's Cassini. That's the code name for Cassini.
Mm.
What we've also done in the last year is ship IIS Express.
Yeah.
And IIS Express support for Visual Studio. And that allows you to kind of swap out that built-in web server for a web server that has the same kind of behavior. It just pops up. It runs without requiring admin access and things like that. But it's running using the full IIS code base. So it gives you, you know, all the features of IIS as part of it. With the new version of Dev 11, we're switching over to have IIS Express be the default web server going forward.
Okay.
And it will just ship as part of VS 2011.
Nice.
But if you want to, you can still go back to Cassini, and you can obviously go to full IIS as mm-hmm. well.
Perfect. And so just so people, you know, to remember, you can learn a lot about the cloud by going to microsoft.com/cloud. We have a few more minutes left. You have any more questions for the goo? #CH9 Live. I would highly recommend that you ask them. #CH9 Live. That looks like a pound sign to me. All right.
Cool.
So in some sense, Scott, as you've moved into this new role in the Azure world, still focus heavily on how you program it.
Yeah.
What are some of your thoughts on, like, when you think about general purpose programming and this cloud thing, right? This distributed computational fabric, the environment, blah, blah, blah. Mm. What kind of stuff do you think about?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the thing that's for me exciting about the cloud is really the potential it unlocks. So, I mean, a lot of what I kind of focus on maybe two things a little bit on my job. One is from a developer experience, how do we make it just, you know, like butter to actually, you know, program to this thing? And so, you know, getting the tooling, the languaging, the frameworks, you know, how do we just sort of make it really smooth and seamless? To kind of build and develop things. And so, you know, for .NET developers today, you know, I want them to say, hey, wow, this thing is just fun, beautiful, wonderful.
Yeah,
and, you know, there's more work that we need to do there, but that's kind of what we're trying to do. And so there's a lot of stuff you can do around productivity that we're going to make a lot better. You know, the other thing, though, that and for existing scenarios, you know, the other thing I think that's interesting about the cloud, though, is the new scenarios. You know, we usually think about databases and data in a very structured way. And, you know, I think if you ask the average developer, how big is your SQL database?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of developers would say, oh, you know, it's 10 gigs or it's 5 gigs or, you know, a terabyte would be considered, a largest database.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do we start thinking about petabytes? Okay. You know, how do we start thinking about integrating our data with existing data sets like Bing or you know, census data or you know, other kind of data sets that are out there in the cloud? And you know, once you can start, you know, and it could just be, you know, purchase order information. You know, the classic scenario, you enter your zip code in on a e-commerce site, and then I have to enter my state and my city as well. You know, but a zip code, I should know what my state and city is from my zip code.
Yeah.
You know, wow, in the cloud, if you have a simple data set that says, give me the state and city for every zip code, you know, suddenly you can easily add that into your app and just take advantage of it.
Sure.
As a simple example, e-commerce functionality, you know, having that kind of large sets of data, you can really start to build apps that you just can't conceptualize today. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the most fun part of the cloud for the next couple of years, is when we come back in future conferences and we start showing you things that you just physically can't do today.
Yeah.
Because you don't have access to that type of data, you don't have that type of elastic resources. Mm. And you know, I think that for developers, that's going to open up just a ton of new opportunities. You know, for people that want to do startups, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can now do on a shoestring budget that would have cost you tens of millions of dollars of data center capacity in the past.
Yeah.
And you know, that's going to be pretty exciting.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I guess we have one more question, then we're going to have Mark Rusinovich on here. Cool. And please, Scott, this should be a yes or no, given our time.
Sure.
So is there any plan to have a message bus for deployment within an off-site network and not Azure?
Yes.
Rock and roll, man. Thank you for coming on Channel 9.
Cool.
Always great to see you.
Great to see you,
Rock and roll.
Thanks.